This week we have a double parsha, Behar B'Chilchosai. The parsha begins, if you have the stone chumash, it's 696-697, it's Perek Chos Hei chapter 25, verse 1. And the parasha starts, Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai, on Har Sinai, saying. And then the pasuk continues, talking about the mitzvah of Shemitah, the sabbatical year. So the first question that immediately comes up is, what is the significance of the emphasis of Bahar Sinai, that Hashem spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai, saying on Mount Sinai? Rashi here points out that really the entire Torah, all the mitzvahs of the Torah were told to Moshe on Har Sinai. For Moshe went up on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights, like we had earlier in the Chumash. And Hashem communicated all the mitzvahs to Moshe on Har Sinai. So why is it mentioned here, the way Rashi asks it, the famous formulation of the question, Ma'in Yin Shemitah Eifel Har Sinai? What does the Shemitah, the sabbatical year, have to do with Har Sinai? Rashi says an answer which itself requires an explanation. I'm not going to quote Rashi's answer right now, but just the question I will try to call our attention to, and that is, what's the significance of mentioning that it says that this, particularly this mitzvah on Har Sinai? The truth is we can make the question even more basic. What difference does it make where the location of where Hashem spoke to Moshe, that it was on Mount Sinai or anywhere else? Why is that important for the Torah to emphasize? Why is that information even significant altogether, that Hashem spoke to Moshe on Mount Sinai? Suppose Hashem spoke to Moshe somewhere else. Would that what difference would that make? Why do we care? That's the question. One question or two. Now, I want to ask another couple of questions. But first of all, I just want to point out before I go move on to the next question, it's interesting that I'm not going to talk so much about, particularly about the parshas B'Chilchosai, which is the second of the two parshas we read this week. However, I did turn all the way to the end of parshas B'Chilchosai, the very last verse in the book of the Vayikra, the book of Leviticus. This is the closing parashios, the closing sections of the book of Sefer Vayikra. And on the very last pasuk, which is in chapter 27, verse 34, which is all the way at the end of the reading of this week, and which is all the way at the end of Sefer Vayikra, it's actually, if you look at the last two words in this week's parasha, which is the last two words of Sefer Vayikra, it again says, Bahar Sinai, on Mount Sinai, these are the mitzvot that Hashem commanded Moshe to the Jewish people. These are the commandments that Hashem commanded Moshe to the children of Israel on Mount Sinai, Bahar Sinai. So again, this emphasis that not only is the mitzvah of Shemitah at the beginning of the parasha was that said on Har Sinai, but all of the mitzvot that are in the Sefer, all the mitzvot that are being referred to here, it's being emphasized that they were given on Har Sinai. And again, the same question, why is that important that they were given on Har Sinai? Why do we need to be told that here? What's the message? Then, if we turn to the end of Parshas Bahar, which is it's chapter 26, verse 1, the last two psukim, it's interesting. I think we've pointed out a number of times here in the past that the chapters and verses are not of the division of the Torah. The chapters and verses, the way we have them here, are not of Jewish origin altogether. It actually comes from the non-Jews. So sometimes or fairly often the chapters and the verses the new chapters where they start don't correspond with the way Jewish tradition would break it up. So here is a striking example of that we have the end of Parshas Bahar, which is a a break in the Sefer Torah that comes after verse 2. So in other words, the chapter starts 2 verses before the end of the section. So here, but anyway, in chapter 26, verse 1, Chavav Pasuk Aleph, the second to the last Pasuk in Parshas Bahar, reads, Losasu lochem elilim, upesu lamatseva losachim lochem. You shall not make idols for yourself, you shall not erect to yourself a statue or a pillar. And then it says, Ve'evan maskis, losiknu ba'artzuchem lehishtachav ozoleha, ki ani Hashem elokeichem. Which they translate, the Arsenal translates, and in your land you shall not emplace a flooring stone upon which to prostrate oneself, for I am Hashem your God. Now this is there's some debate in the commentaries of exactly what this means, but the way Rashi explains it is that a person should not place a a stone flooring in order to bow down on it. Or this is a prohibition against prostrating oneself, bowing down on a stone floor. And this is actually something some of you may be aware that of this issue, that normally we don't really prostrate ourselves. It's not for many, many years. It hasn't been part of the regular service in a synagogue and in davening in a shul to prostrate ourselves on the floor, except with the exception of on Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah. In many places, people do prostrate themselves, not totally prostrating themselves, but people bow down to put their heads down, their knees, they kneel and put their heads down on the floor. And there's an issue that if it's a stone floor, it may present a problem based on this verse. Because this verse says, don't prostrate yourself on a stone floor. And the question is, what's wrong with that? What's the problem with prostrating oneself on a stone floor? And we'll talk about, I think we spoke about this last year a little bit, about it, but as Hashem, we'll talk about it again, and hopefully get even some more clarity. And then finally, the last pasuk, the very next pasuk, the last pasuk in Parshas Bahar, chapter 26, verse 2, the pasuk says, "Es shabsosai tishmoru, es umikdashi tirou, ani Hashem. My Sabbaths you shall observe, and my sanctuary shall you revere. I am Hashem." So the pasuk says, keep the Shabbat, observe Shabbos, and revere the sanctuary. Now, what's interesting about this pasuk is that this exact pasuk, I believe, word for word, is found in last week's parsha, in Parshas Kedoshim, in chapter 19, verse 30, we have exactly the same words. Word for word, the same thing. So the question is, why is this pasuk repeated here? The obvious question. Exactly the same pasuk. And what's the connection between the two halves of the pasuk, the Shabbos and the mikdash? Okay, I think those are the questions for tonight. So just to repeat them briefly, why the emphasis at the beginning of the parasha on the fact that the laws of Shemitah were given on Har Sinai, on Mount Sinai, for that matter, why the emphasis altogether that anything was given on Mount Sinai, and that itself is repeated again at the end of the parasha's Bichlkosai, that the mitzvot discussed in this book of Leviticus were given on Har Sinai. Why is that so important? The second question is, what's the significance of this prohibition against bowing, prostrating oneself on a flooring stone, on a stone floor? What's the significance of that? What's the idea behind that? And finally, what's the repetition of this pasuk? Keep, observe my Shabbos and revere my sanctuary. I am Hashem. Those are the questions I want to get to tonight. So, excuse me. So I want to begin going back again to the beginning of Parshas Bahar. We have the laws of Shemitah, of the sabbatical year. where if you look at the Pesukim there, we see that the Pasuk says that you can plant for 6 years, but the seventh year, it should be a Sabbath for the land. Don't plant, don't harvest, and so on and so forth. Now, I want to share with you something. I think I shared this. I don't know that I shared this very recently, but I'm still known in the past in this venue. Some of you have been attending this class for years, and this may sound familiar. I want to share with you something that I heard from a teacher of mine when I was probably, 18 or 19 years old. He gave a little talk on this parasha, goes back a few years, and he said something that has stuck with me until today. He said the following thought. He repeated in the name of his grandfather, who was a well-known tzaddik of Chatzko Levenstein, who was the Mashkiach, the spiritual leader of a number of yeshivas in the mid-20th century, both in pre-war Europe and then later in Israel. Anyway, but this was the thought. The thought was the following. He says, you know, let's look at the Shemitah year. He says, how do we look at the Shemitah year? So he says, normally we look at this, that this is a really strange year. What's a strange year? Every year, the farmer, remember, we have to picture agricultural society. So every year, the farmer, he plants, he tills the soil, and he plants, and things grow, and he harvests. And he has what he needs that way. The Shemitah year, the Torah is telling us not to plant, not to harvest, and then the pasuk continues there and it says, but if you're going to ask, what are you going to eat? Don't worry about it. Hashem will take care of it. You'll have what to eat. So it sounds like it's a very strange thing. You're not going through the normal course of what needs to be done, and you're still going to get the result. Usually, 1 plus 1 equals 2. And here, you have 0 plus 0 equals 2, right? Usually, the planting and the harvesting equals that you have what to eat. And during the Shemitah, you have no planting and no harvesting, and you still have what to eat. Isn't that strange, right? That's, I think, the way we normally would look at the Shemitah year. So explain to this teacher of mine that if we look at it like that, we're missing the message of the Shemitah year. The message of the Shemitah year is that on the exact opposite, that the Shemitah year is the normal year and every year is strange. And the concept behind that is that the message of the Shemitah year is like the Pasuk says many times over and over again in this parashas, that really Hashem is the boss of the land. Hashem is, God created the world and God is in charge of the world. Hashem created the world. And if Hashem wants us to eat and have food, we'll eat and have food. And if Hashem doesn't want us to eat and have food, we're not going to eat. We're not going to have food. The planting and the harvesting and all that doesn't really make any difference. That's just the kind of the smoke screen that Hashem has given us all the time, that we go through these Moses. Hashem says, I want you to go through those Moses. And it looks like those things are really giving it to us. But if we understand what's really going on beneath the surface, we understand the deep inner workings of the universe, we'll know that it really has nothing to do with those things. It really has to do with only one thing, which is the will of Hashem. Because underlying everything is that and only that. And if you don't have the will of Hashem, then nothing happens. And if you do have the will of Hashem, anything can happen. And therefore, the rest of the years, we have this distraction, this smokescreen, this covering that makes us, that confuses us and makes us not cognizant of the underlying reality, which is the will of Hashem running everything. And therefore, those years are the years of confusion, and really, in some sense, it's the years of the not normal years, because it's the years that have these distractions and coverings and confusion as to what's really going on. And the Shemitah year, we get rid of all that stuff. And Hashem says, okay, just 1 year, just forget all of that nonsense. Forget the planting, forget the harvesting, all that stuff is irrelevant. You want to know how you'll have your food? Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. And that's the message of the Shemitah, of the Shemitah year. That this is what I heard about as many more years ago than I want to count. Probably over 35 years ago, let's just put it that way. From one of my teachers, and it made a strong impression on me when I was a young, impressionable teenager, and the impression is still there someplace, so I wanted to share that with you. I've shared many times in the past. So this is the way he taught us to look at Shemitah. Now, what I want to take this idea, and I think this idea goes one step further. This concept that we just learned was that the laws of nature could and often is a covering, a distraction, something that doesn't allow us to see beneath the surface and to see that it's Hashem's hand and only Hashem's hand that's really behind everything in this world. But it's not only the laws of nature that could distract us. There are many things. There are many things that could be a distraction. Another example of something that could be a distraction is like the beauty that we find in this world, whether it's natural beauty or even man-made beauty. So one example of this is, let's say, sometimes you can take a look. I mean, certainly natural beauty. Often there are many people. Often I wonder, sometimes it confuses me, I have to tell you the truth. Often I wonder, many people, myself included, enjoy going to the great outdoors. We live here in Colorado. We go to the mountains. We see the beautiful nature, the mountains and the valleys and the rivers and all of those things. And it's awesome. It's really something overwhelmingly awesome. And something comes to my mind now. It's in a couple of weeks, it's going to be my late father's yard site. So I just remember something my father used to say. I used to go when I was a child, we used to go often in the summers we spent in upstate New York or not so far upstate in the Catskill Mountains, in the Catskills of New York. I can't call them mountains. If my kids would hear me calling the Catskills mountains, they would make a big ruckus because us Coloradans, we know what mountains are. Those things are like little anthills or something. But we would go. I grew up in New York, so I'm more kinds of things that people call mountains. So anyway, when we used to spend the summer in the Catskills, and my father, may his memory be blessed, would take us to climb one of the Catskill mountains, if you will. And almost every summer we would find these trails and we would go climb, and then often on the top there was this beautiful view. And my father, I remember, used to say that it's a religious experience. Those were his words. My father was a man of few words, so it made a big impression on me. I remember hearing those words. He didn't express his emotions very much. But sometimes when he would see this gorgeous panorama from the top of the mountain, he would say it's a religious experience, which it should be because it's so awesome. However, oftentimes, unfortunately, we get distracted by the awesomeness of the scene, and we don't connect it to Hashem. We just say wow, and it just remains this kind of this undefined feeling that this is really something overwhelming, but we don't connect it to its source. Its source is the creator of the world, and there's actually a bracha that we're supposed to say when we encounter, let's say, beautiful mountains. We're supposed to say a bracha, thanking Hashem who created the world, like the Master Bereshit, who made the creation, because it's not necessarily automatic. Just because we feel something that this is something big and this is something awesome, we don't necessarily connect it to the source of all that's big and awesome, which is Hashem. And so even things like the beauty of nature, could sometimes we can lose the, you know, what's the word? We can lose the forest and the trees or something like that. In other words, we just see this little point of creation and we get overwhelmed by it, and then we don't take a step back in our mind and say, "Wow, Hashem created this." And that can even be true by natural things. It certainly can be true by man-made things. Sometimes we see a beautiful architecture or something like that, and it's really beautiful and gorgeous. And again, we can connect it to, we can say, well, the architect was really something. But do we connect it back again to those feelings of Hashem? Oftentimes we don't, even though those things are also opportunities. Even any of the beauty in this world is an opportunity to connect it back to the creator of the world. And this is perhaps, according to some commentaries, they explain this idea of not bowing down on a stone floor. There's really a question of exactly how to translate the verse, but at least according to some commentaries, the idea is that there's this beautiful architecture, there's this stone floor that was put down, and that and Rashi over there explains, even if you're bowing down to Hashem, this is the point. Even if we're bowing down to Hashem, we shouldn't bow down to the stone floor. Why not? Because the stone floor could be a distraction. The stone floor, the beauty of it, could possibly distract us, that we'll forget about that we're bound to Hashem and instead bow down to the floor. That's what some of the commentaries say. Why exactly we're concerned with it by a stone floor more than anything else needs an explanation. But the general concept over here seems to be that even a beautiful piece of architecture could serve as a way of even though it may give us feelings of it's awe-inspiring, can sometimes, if we're not careful, can pull us away from what really should be awe-inspiring, which is our bowing down to Hashem. And therefore, that's why we shouldn't bow down on stone flooring. That's one possibility. Now, I think this goes even further. We spoke about the laws of nature. We spoke about the beauty of nature or the beauty of architecture. But I really go even a step further than this. This is something from the Gemara. The Gemara, I think, in the Sefer Yevamos, I think we quoted this last year. If anyone remembers last year's class from Bahar B'Kosai, it'll sound familiar. But I don't know, Mark, if you have notes from there or something. But the Gemara in Yevamos tells us the following thing. It says on these words, "Esabsosai Tishmor," the last words in Parashat Bahar, 26:2. It says that you should, my Sabbath shall you observe, and my sanctuary shall you revere. I am Hashem. Says the Gemara something very interesting. It seems peculiar. The Gemara says that the juxtaposition of these two, keeping Shabbos and observing observing Shabbos and revering my sanctuary, is coming to tell us something about revering the sanctuary. Says the Gemara that, because that just like Shabbos, we don't revere Shabbos intrinsically for Shabbos itself. We revere Shabbos because Hashem gave us the Shabbos. So too, when we're revering the Mikdash, when we're revering the sanctuary, lo mi Mikdash atam asyarei, don't be awestruck by the sanctuary itself, but rather be awestruck by Hashem, who resides, so to speak, in the sanctuary. So the Gemara is bringing out a fascinating point, that it's possible if a person can go into the sanctuary. So we don't have the Beis Hamikdash anymore, but we have what's the Can you still hear me? Did I lose you?
No, I got you. You can hear you.
Okay, and see me? Okay. Again, for some reason, I lost you, but it's fine. It's fine. If you can see and hear me, that's great. So the so it says there's an idea that the mikdash, the concept seems to be as follows. The person goes into the Beis HaMikdash, into the sanctuary, whether it's the Beis HaMikdash that they had in Jerusalem, or today we have the...
Mary, you're muted. You're muted.
Now we cannot hear you, Rabbi.
Okay, now can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, I don't know where you lost me exactly.
One sentence.
What did you say?
One sentence ago.
One sentence ago. Okay, that's fine. Okay. Okay. Thank you. So a person goes into the base, let me just into the holy sanctuary. Imagine he enters this beautiful, gorgeous building, and this building is dedicated to the service of Hashem. It's a base of Mikdash. And it's built with this awesome architecture and gold and silver and all sorts of the golden candelabras and all kinds of things. And a person comes in there and he's awestruck. And there's a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of the pasuk says, Mikdashi Tiro, my sanctuary shall you revere. A person is supposed to feel awestruck. And we're supposed to treat our sanctuaries and our shuls in a way that we would treat something that we revere, that we're inspired by, that we treat it with a tremendous reverence and respect. All that is true, but it seems from the Gemara that even that is somewhat dangerous. There's a danger that a person could revere the awesomeness of the sanctuary, but not connect it to the one with a capital O who resides in the sanctuary. Because it could just be, wow, this is really something. This is unbelievable. This building is so beautiful and it's stunning. I'm stunned. The person could be stunned, but if it doesn't connect it to the one who resides in the sanctuary, then that person is missing the boat, and it's the sanctuary itself that's in a sense misleading him, because he's revering the sanctuary instead of Hashem, and that's what the Gemara tells us that this pasuk is filled with the Gemara that talks about this pasuk, and maybe it's not so clear, but perhaps it's talking about the repetition of this pasuk, that this pasuk is coming to tell us, it's not just coming to tell us the mitzvah that we have to keep Shabbos and the mitzvah that we have to treat the sanctuary with respect, but it's coming to tell us more than that. It's coming to tell us that the reverence for the sanctuary, similar to the way we keep Shabbos, should be like the last words say, Ani Hashem. We shouldn't separate that from the fact from Hashem. But on the contrary, we should use the Shabbos and the Mikdash as a means to fortify our relationship to and our reverence for Hashem. And that's why maybe that those psukim are there. Now, I think I think we can possibly take this idea even one step further. That not only so far, what did we say? We said that the laws of nature can be a distraction. The beauty in this world can be a distraction. Even the beauty of the temple or the sanctuary could possibly be a distraction. And there could be even one more thing that can possibly, if we don't use it the right way, as a distraction. And that's even the mitzvos of the Torah themselves. And what do I mean to say? That a person, it's possible for a person to be dedicated to keeping the mitzvahs, and he follows all the rules, he opens up the rule book, this is the way I'm supposed to keep Shabbos, this is the way I'm supposed to I mean, we this is the way I'm supposed to do this and that and the other thing. Or even in the personal relations, this is the way I'm supposed to treat other people and all of those things. They could be following all those things, but they can possibly forget the inner essence of it. And what's the inner essence of the mitzvot? The inner essence of the mitzvot is that they're from Hashem, the commandment of mitzvah. Some people forget what the word mitzvah means. Mitzvah means a commandment. So what's a commandment? A commandment implies a commander, right? The commandment means that there's Hashem who commanded us, Hashem who gave us these mitzvahs, the mitzvahs that came from Hashem. And that's why I believe there's such an emphasis here in general on the fact that the mitzvahs were given on Har Sinai. The mitzvahs were given on Mount Sinai. So we asked before, what's the difference where the mitzvahs were given? So it's true that really it shouldn't really make any difference where they were given. But the fact that we're given on Har Sinai is calling our attention to the fact, it's a reminder of the place where we, the Jewish people, felt the presence and the commander more than any other time in history. We had the revelation in Har Sinai that Hashem revealed himself. Hashem opened up opened up our eyes, pulled apart all the curtains, and Hashem showed us that he was there and he was the one talking to us and he was the one commanding to us. That's what happened on Har Sinai. And so when the Torah says that Hashem gave the mitzvahs to us on Har Sinai, Hashem is telling us that it's not just a question of location, of, you know, it's an interesting historical fact that the location where the Torah was given was on Har Sinai. No, it means something much deeper than that. It means to call our attention to the fact that whenever we're doing a mitzvah, we have to trace it back to Har Sinai. When we're doing a mitzvah, we have to see and feel the presence of the mitzvah, of the commander. And that's perhaps why it's specifically mentioned in the context of Shemitah. If we pull all this together, because it's the same concept as Shemitah. Just like Shemitah is what pulls away the curtain of the laws of nature and allows us to see the Hashem, who's the commander of nature, so to speak. That we think we can look at nature and think that, and sometimes think that it just has a life of its own, and forget that there's someone behind it that's commanding the laws of nature to work. And Shemitah is our opportunity to see that it's the commander who's ultimately pulling all the strings and making the whole world work and giving the farmer or whoever it is the food that they need the whole year. That's what Shemitah is. So too, what Shemitah is to the laws of nature, Har Sinai is to the mitzvot. That we have to know that the fact that the mitzvot are given on Har Sinai, that's what pulls the curtain away from the mitzvot, meaning that we shouldn't think that the mitzvah is just, you know, something that you do with a good, it's a wonderful thing, it's an ethical thing, it makes our lives meaningful, it makes our lives joyous, which is all true. It does do all of those things. It's the best way for a human being to live on many, many different levels. But if we only keep the mitzvahs that way, then that could distract us from what mitzvahs really are. And what mitzvahs really are is an expression of the will of the commander, which is what we saw on Har Sinai. Har Sinai is where we were shown that it's Hashem that's giving us the mitzvot, and that's what it is. And I think that this is these parshas that we're reading here of Bahar B'Kukosai, it always comes shortly before the holiday of Shavuot, and which is in 2 weeks from yesterday or whatever, something like that. And the Gemara actually says that there's a special reason why we read these parshas before Shavuot. It went to something else, but I think it would be appropriate to say that this idea, and certainly is very striking, that the beginning, the first pasuk in this week's Parsha and the last pasuk in this week's Parsha both mention Har Sinai, which is Mount Sinai, which is obviously the most connected to Shavuos. And according the way we're trying to explain it now is that this is really the message of the Parsha, but it's also the message of Shavuos. Every year on Shavuos, where we read the section of the Torah that talks about how Hashem gave the Torah in Har Sinai, this is something that's given to us to inform our performance of the mitzvot, our keeping of the Torah, our lore, our study of the Torah. It all has to be informed by the fact that the Torah, it's the source of the Torah, and the source of the mitzvot was Har Sinai, which is from Hashem. And that gives us the ability to constantly be aware of Hashem in our lives, and that'll make our lives, by taking all of this to heart that we said, that we can live our lives, awesome lives, in the right way. Whether it's the laws of nature, whether it's the beauty in nature, whether it's the beauty in other things, whether it's our shuls, whether it's our Shabbos, whether it's our mitzvahs, whether it's learning Torah, all of those things could be traced back and should be traced back as much as we can to the presence of Hashem. And that brings us a presence of Hashem in our lives, which will elevate our lives in a whole new way. That's what I wanted to share with you tonight, and have a wonderful evening. Thank you all for joining us.